ba bu ba bu ba bum ba bu ba bu ba 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 bu ba bu ba bum ba bu ba bu ba bum.
You're supposed to go Friday at some point.
Oh, is that? Oh,
you're supposed to, yeah.
It's Friday.
No, not it's Friday. Just
Friday.
Just Friday. Yeah, like say that.
Friday.
Yeah, that sounded good.
So, is this your regular Friday music?
No, we use this music every day because upstairs they could only afford one CD. Like downstairs, they've got thousands of them, but upstairs we can only afford one. So we play this as our intro every day.
It's like you're on channel 60.
Yeah,
just some way off thing. They just throw some music on some Indian show that nobody can understand.
Right. So Wendy started a couple of weeks ago just mentioning, she just subtly kind of, as an afterthought, just throws it in which day of the week it is. And on days we don't do it, people are upset.
Really? Yeah. Wow. I'm Friday.
Yeah. Yeah, you have to say it with that kind of a smile. Like
right.
It's Friday.
Friday.
And why on a Friday with the sun?
Well, how do you not smile?
Cubs going to clinch in a couple of days.
Magic number what? Six?
Six.
That could actually, they can clinch it. They can't clinch it again.
If they win this series,
they can get
if
down.
They win the next three games against Milwaukee.
They
yes.
can, isn't that right?
So pending what the Cardinals do.
Yeah,
but with 10 games left, you're 4.5 up on Milwaukee. You're 5 on St. Louis, and you're playing them. Things look good.
Every game is worth 2, Bill.
Yes. Well, very, very, very true. Now, speaking of the Cubs, really quickly before we get to the topic of the day, you were just saying, and I get this that Javi Baez, the sometimes second baseman, sometimes shortstop for the Cubs, drives you crazy. And I said, how can that be? This is a wonderkind.
Well, yeah, you know, he's one of those players that drives me up a wall because he has such a swagger.
Oh, by the way, that's Jim Toronto talking,
right.
Everybody. You're filling in for Wendy. That's not Wendy.
No,
Wendy has a much deeper voice.
That's right. And he's got such a swagger, which is fine. I have nothing against swagger.
Yes.
I've got my own kind of swagger.
Yes.
But he drives me crazy.
A
Baez-esque
swagger.
Hey, my hair was blonde a couple years ago, too. But what drives me crazy is he is a very undisciplined player in many ways. He has a hot temper.
Mm-hmm.
He is easily distracted sometimes in the field and up to bat.
Mm-hmm.
He drives me crazy because he swings. He's such a free swinger.
Mm-hmm.
He defines the term free swinger.
Yes.
And so in the World Series, for instance, last year, he's driving me crazy because all they were doing was just throwing him junk pitches that were way outside.
He was taking the bait.
And he was just swinging at balls, bouncing, wild pitch. I mean, it was ridiculous. Or that high fastball at the eyes, he can't lay off of.
Right.
At the same time, boy, can he come through in the clutch. That's the thing that drives me. I have this yin and yang with him.
Yeah.
Because he drives me nuts, and then he hits a homer.
I'm normally like that with somebody with a little too much swagger, normally.
I don't mind the swagger. I just don't like the undisciplined.
But if the guy can back it up,
right?
Like I don't like people who are cocky with nothing to back it up.
Exactly.
He's incredibly cocky, but he backs it up. He makes plays
and
that don't make sense.
And think about just what happened here. The Cubs lost for a good stretch, Addison Russell, who was their regular shortstop, who had a great season last year, kind of a up and down season this year,
mm-hmm.
but he filled in at shortstop for him. They not only it wasn't a come down, they didn't miss a beat. It was an upgrade.
Yeah.
The guy made some incredible plays at shortstop, hit the cover off the ball, and during that time is when the Cubs ascended into first place. So it's hard to to not like him, but there's those moments when he's in that clutch situation
mm-hmm.
where you say, oh my God, he's going to strike out. He's swinging for the fence. He's going to be undisciplined. They're going to throw him some junk. And yet sometimes that does happen. He does strike out. And other times, like the game yesterday,
mm-hmm.
he comes through with the game
with
time
two
hit.
Strikes and two outs in the ninth. Gets a single, a slow rolling single, and
and he's fast. I mean, there's no question of his talent. He's not
a great
star.
Actor. Yeah. You've seen that commercial that he does.
Yeah.
He's a fantastic actor. Some are saying he's the National League's Lord Olivier.
Well, maybe, or would be Olivier. Oh, how would you say it in Spanish?
I don't know.
Yeah. Oliva.
Oliva.
There you go.
Tony Oliva.
And I think he's a little too young to have a street named after him, which there is a Javi Baez way somewhere.
There
already.
Should be.
Yeah.
There definitely should be.
The fun thing I think is 2 years ago,
mm-hmm.
he was on the trading block.
Mm-hmm.
They were going to trade him before last season, that winter. I mean, he wound up being the MVP of the playoffs.
Right.
And now this year, he's been an invaluable member of the team. He could have been traded 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Think of that.
I like seeing guys. It's a profession, and yet it's a game at the same time. You play baseball. George Carlin told me that once.
Wow, that's, could you say that again?
Play baseball.
No, it's a profession.
It's a profession.
And a game.
And a game.
Wow.
And he's a guy who just really seems to
that's
enjoy
why you listen to the internet portion for gems like that.
Bits of wisdom like this. He enjoys himself. I don't know how you can be a professional baseball player and take yourself so seriously that you don't get excited. And you saw him yesterday, like when the home run was hit in the 10th. He was at the top of the stairs, couldn't wait to greet Chris Bryant. And then on the next one, Anthony Rizzo hit a ball that ended up being a triple. But you saw him complaining and yelling and making the home run signal and stuff. I love a guy who's that into it. Carlos Zambrano was kind of a polarizing figure here in Chicago. But I liked him because he was like a big kid. He just wanted to win.
Yeah.
He would do whatever it takes.
Well, the only
win.
Thing is, and Zambrano was another one of those guys that drove me crazy. I think there's a difference between Baez and Zambrano, though. I can see the similarities, but Zambrano seemed to have an edge to it. I think.
And needed some anger management classes.
Whereas I think Baez is, there's just a. An inherent enthusiasm.
Oh yeah,
it's not mean spirited.
No,
it's not an edge to it. It's just
enjoys succeeding.
It's just crazy passion.
Yeah,
you know
that's what it is.
But yeah, I mean, I it's funny because this has been an interesting season for me as a Cub fan because they've been so erratic for 5.5 months
mm-hmm.
that it's been really hard for me to get into this season.
But everybody said. Wait till it counts, and then you'll see the real Cubs. And then it started counting, and you saw the real Cubs.
Right at the All-Star break.
When they were 5.5 out at the midway point at the All-Star break, I said to myself, this could end up taking them a month to climb back in. And
boom.
A week later, they were right back in it.
So, the only thing that scares me, once again moving forward, is I have to say this, and I said it back then, so I don't feel bad about it. I think Joe Maddon has not really been a good manager since... After game six.
This is like saying Oprah should have her talk show taken away from
her. I understand that. And I know that winning heals all wounds. But
do you subscribe to the theory that sometimes he overmanages?
I think he way overmanages. I think he way overmanages. I think he also is a little too... he stays with some players way too long, whether they're veterans or whether he likes them. I mean, I've been watching... I mean, the way he's been handling John Lester...
Yeah.
Going back to the World Series worries me in that there's some times when a guy just doesn't have it.
So you pull him out.
And you just pull him out.
Except he knows he's going to a bullpen that's iffy at best.
I understand that. And I just think that, look, he hasn't made any mistakes. You know, he won the World Series, so he gets a good 20-year grace period.
Yes, he does.
I understand that.
Yeah.
But it does scare me because I think that the first two seasons, everything he did worked, and the team responded. And this year, interestingly enough now, he'll get credit because, you know, for almost, like I said, 5.5 months, it seemed like he lost his magic, and then now... Boom.
Last year he was doing stuff like he would take a pitcher and he would take him out of the game and he'd put him in right field and he'd let the right fielder pitch and then they'd switch him back.
Yeah.
And then a guy would be ready to bunt and he'd say to Anthony Rizzo, go stand behind the batter while he's bunting.
Right.
He'd go, I don't want to no, trust me, this will work. So that was last year. So then last night, in the bottom of the ninth, he does this thing where they have bases loaded, the Brewers, and one out. And then he brings in one of the outfielders, and he makes the other outfielders sit on a lawn chair and play a game of checkers. And I said, there's no way this could be good with one out in the bottom of the ninth. And it worked.
Yeah. So I guess there's a same thing with him. I mean, once again, all sins of last year's.
When you win, the sinning doesn't matter.
All sins
he
are forgiven.
Did in that last game, I hope he realizes he made some mistakes that could have cost them the World Series in that last game. But in the end, they won.
And that's why it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
He was like one out away from being the new Bartman.
Right.
I mean, he was. Right. He would have been. It would have. Who knows how the people would have reacted?
Right.
I don't know if he would have made. He might not have had a job this year.
Put Aroldis Chapman in way too early. Let him pitch too long.
Yeah. I mean, and if being a former catcher. In my day.
Yes.
I know when a pitcher doesn't have it.
Right.
And I saw
right
that game before game seven. And I told my wife, I said, I know we won this game, but tomorrow is the big game.
Right.
And we don't have our best guy.
Yes. You're a former catcher.
Yes.
You used to catch for Jim Palmer, I remember, with the Baltimore Orioles.
He had an amazing curveball.
Boy, could he throw.
Yeah, me and Rick Dempsey. But, but yeah, you know, it's just, I was screaming when I saw John Lester warming up in the second inning. Hendricks was pitching an amazing game,
right,
and he couldn't wait to get Lester in that game.
I know.
And I'm like, Lester is a starting pitcher. He does not know how to come out of a bullpen. And what was the first thing he did? Threw a wild pitch.
Some problems, yes.
But right. I digress.
But they won.
It doesn't matter.
Happy.
And Jimmy cracked corn,
and
I don't care.
None of us care.
Right.
Who cares about Jimmy cracking corn?
Oh.
All right. Jim, we have 2 minutes left. Is that enough time to cover our topic? Now, we have 2 minutes left in this segment, and then there will be some news, and then there's more time.
All right.
But let's just quickly tease something about Rolling Stone that you brought up that I think is a very valid point.
Yeah, I actually am talking about this in the podcast of mine that will be posted on Monday.
Tell people the name of the podcast.
Yeah, it's Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic.
You know what's interesting about that name? It sounds almost like Captain Fantastic. You're a fan of Elton John. Were you thinking about that at all when you
I wonder.
It?
And if you ever see the logo.
I noticed the logo's almost identical.
Isn't that cool?
So it's coincidence,
yes,
right?
Very,
right?
Yeah, sometimes it works out just right.
Yeah. All right, so Captain Podtastic.
Podtastic,
yeah.
Yes.
You'll, Scott Podsednik.
Yeah, right.
That's the name of my podcast.
He got traded, though.
I know.
But, yeah, so interestingly in the pop culture world is that Rolling Stone magazine, this is the great irony, it celebrates its 50th year this year. It was founded in the Summer of Love in 1967. So they have this great banner on their magazine, 50th anniversary for the past year.
Yes.
They've done a story about some of the, you know, the whole beginnings of the magazine and some of the things that's been known for in this 50th anniversary kind of thing. And just before the 50th year ends, Jan Wenner, the founder of the magazine, says, I think I'm going to sell.
We're dumping out on it.
Yeah. Which, yep. Really, to be honest with you, doesn't surprise me because I've been reading Rolling Stone since I was a little kid in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Rolling Stone has kind of, it's outlasted its usefulness.
It's certainly not. For a while in the industry, it was one of the most respected magazines there was.
Well, it was the Bible of the counterculture.
Yeah,
I mean, it really was.
So we'll examine. We've got to take a break, and then we'll do some news. We'll examine what changed. Did the magazine change? Did society change? How did Rolling Stone become almost obsolete, if not obsolete? We'll cover that in just a little
62
bit.
62 pages.
I was just going to say,
62,
for a 50th anniversary edition, that's the thinnest I've ever seen.
This is one trip to the bathroom, and you're done.
That's their selling point. All right. We'll get some news in, and then we'll decide what happened. Why is Rolling Stone not the Rolling Stone of the golden years anymore? What happened to it? That's coming up in just a little bit. It's Bill F. And Jim Toronto is in for Wendy on WGN. All right, so we were talking right before the break there about Rolling Stone magazine, which is about to turn 50. Their 50th anniversary issue just came out.
Well, this is the whole year. This is the year, 19.
They're celebrating the whole year, right?
This whole year, yeah.
And it's so thin.
Oh.
It used to just be the Bible of the industry.
Rolling Stone. When it came out, because I still have some issues from the 70s.
You still do have some issues, Jim.
I have a lot of issues from the 70s and the late 60s.
Right. Those will never go away.
Or even the mid-60s when the forceps started this whole thing. But, no, I mean, I've got some that, you know, Elton issues because he was on the cover four times in the 70s. So if you remember, Rolling Stone used to be... It was like a newspaper.
Right.
It was on newspaper print.
Right.
And it was so thick, it was folded.
I remember.
I mean, it was hefty.
Right.
And it had different sections. And, it was.
And if you got good reviews about something in Rolling Stone or negative reviews, it could change your career.
The cover, I mean, there was a song by Dr. Hook called The Cover of the Rolling Stone. And, I mean, because if you were in especially the rock world in the late, mid-60s, early 70s, and then any kind of even ancillary kind of cultural kind of thing.
Right.
If you made the cover of the Rolling Stone, you made it.
You were somebody.
You were somebody.
That was the Wheaties box
for
magazines. Yeah.
And so there's no question, but at the same time, I mean, Kevin, in his millennial ways.
Yes.
Which can you? Yeah, you're over here, right?
Yeah, you got me.
Yeah,
Kevin's 30.
Now, Kevin's 30.
I'm a cusper. I'm not quite millennial.
Yeah.
Right.
Stanley Cusper. How's that for a reference?
Nicely done, Jim.
Nice assessing. Nice assessor.
All the county assessors in the audience just smiled.
All right.
Now we're talking.
But regardless of either cusper or not, you're still there. Rolling Stone, Bill and I, around the same age. I think we are the same age. Mm-hmm. This was a big magazine. I'm sure you read it on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. Do you even care what Rolling Stone magazine is? He doesn't even care what the radio show is at this point, clearly, because he's not paying attention.
He's
on the phone.
Fielding phone calls.
But, I used to sit around with my friends, and we would say, who's going to be on the cover next week?
Right.
I mean, it was that kind of an important thing.
Now, to their credit, every once in a while, they still pull something off. Like a year or so ago, Rolling Stone rated all the performers that have ever been cast members for Saturday Night Live last to first.
Yes.
So for a week, everybody they got an incredible amount of attention.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
so
that,
they still do it every once in a
while.
Yeah,
but you know what? Anybody could do that with a list. And then don't forget, about 2 years ago, they got in trouble because they basically had to retract a story about an alleged rape case at the University of Virginia, which they took a big hit from not only from a reputation standpoint, but they got sued.
Yep.
And it was a story that wasn't confirmed, and it was a lot of inaccuracies. So they took a hit journalistically, and that was the thing about Rolling Stone, because what was so important about it, we said before the break, it really was the cultural, the counterculture Bible, because it was one of those perfect storms. It was founded in 67. You had the Summer of Love. You had where rock and roll was gaining prominence because of the baby boomer generation, as well as it was becoming more socially aware, the music and the artists, and you had the Vietnam War. So Rolling Stone reflected that. It was not only about music, but it was also about different things like drugs and, you know, all the kind of baby boomer topics, civil rights, the war, the draft, the environment. So it really, at the time, was speaking to a generation that at that time didn't really have a voice.
Right.
And that's why it became so prominent. It didn't have a voice at that time, but it did have the numbers. The baby boomers, you know, then became the establishment. And I think that's why Rolling Stone lost its edge, because when you're on the outside rebelling, but when you become the establishment, where's your edge anymore?
Then what do you do?
Yeah.
Let's take a phone call. John is on the line. John has something to add about Rolling Stone celebrating its 50th anniversary this year. John, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing well, guys. How are you doing?
Really good. Rolling Stone plays an important part in your life, doesn't it?
You know, it really does. I was really turned on, you know, not by just the music coverage, but let me tell you something. The writers that contributed, William Grider and Tom Wolfe, but especially, above all, Hunter S. Thompson, unbelievable. The stories that those guys covered in Rolling Stone, really, I mean, I have every Hunter Thompson book printed on my bookshelf. It really had an impact. It made me see the world when I was just, you know, I was a young guy, and I wasn't really aware of the greater world. These guys really made me aware of the greater world. But another comment I want to make too is that it used to be counterculture, but there is no more counterculture anymore. This is something that, you know, music has blended. There's no their music and our music anymore. I mean, it's all the same.
Well, that was one of my points about the fact that this is being sold, and you're exactly correct. There is no counterculture. And so my question, you know, a lot of people may be lamenting the fact that Rolling Stone is leaving. But my question is, you know, sometimes, you know, it served a purpose when it was around and when it was founded. And that's why it hit, because it spoke to a void.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe, you know, not everything lasts forever. And so, to John's point, there's no more counterculture. And Rolling Stone, I think, has lost its way. It doesn't know if it's a music magazine or if it's a pop culture magazine, or, you know, they've been doing stuff about country music. So, what am I going to this for now?
You know, the funny thing, if I may just jump in here, is that I try to explain to my kids what it was like when I was their age. You know, I didn't listen to mainstream music. I was listening to the alternative radio stations that you get off college campuses, and they just don't get that. They don't realize that, you know, there was a time in the early 80s, late 70s, that you didn't hear edgy music on pop radio. You had to go to college stations for that.
Oh, I remember. I was on college radio in the early 80s. We were playing what they used to call import music. We were playing Duran Duran and Depeche Mode and all those British bands that were never on the radio.
Right.
Until MTV hit in the mid 80s.
I tell my kids, I said, you know, when I was a kid, because they're really into Michael Jackson for some reason. I said, Michael Jackson was, that we would never, that we'd be laughed at. My friends
right.
would laugh at me if I played Michael Jackson. They just don't get that. And that same applied, I try to tell them, I said, that would apply to Taylor Swift today or, you know, anybody on the Kiss 100 station, whatever
yeah.
it's called.
Yeah, you're completely correct. It is it's a totally different world. And that's my point is, I don't think Rolling Stone, but I must say though, I think where Rolling Stone lost its relevance is that, In many years ago, it's not just now, is that, you know, you are what you are, or you reinvent yourself. But if you reinvent yourself and it's really counter to what you are,
mm-hmm.
then I don't know if it's worth reinventing
well,
yourself.
Well, look, here's a good example. Playboy decided a little over a year
exactly.
ago, no more naked ladies in Playboy. Enough
exactly.
of that. If you want a naked lady, go to the internet. But that's if you were getting Playboy, that's kind of what you were hoping for.
And they went back.
Yeah.
Because, and that's my point. And so, Neil, maybe just, I understand it's a historical magazine title. It's an iconic thing. But maybe it's just time that there is no need for Playboy anymore.
Yeah.
Because back in the 50s,
right.
there was.
Right. Right.
Now, as you said, you can go on the internet in 4 seconds.
Yeah.
Or you can go on Snapchat. Who needs to go
right.
to a porn site?
Or in the newsroom here at WGN,
exactly.
as we just learned.
Yeah.
John, thank you. Thank you so much for your call.
And tell your kids not to listen to Michael Jackson.
Right. A warning from Jim. Thanks, John. Have a good weekend. But couldn't you say that both Rolling Stone magazine and MTV, the timing on their inceptions couldn't have been more perfect,
no.
right?
MTV was another one. Perfect
yeah.
timing.
But look what they did when they tried to reinvent themselves. Like they said, all right, it was music videos that brought us here, but from now on, no more music videos. We're going to do the real world. We're going to do game shows and stuff like that. Was that good or was that bad?
Well, here's the best part. So once again, who are you? What are you?
Right.
Because they still have the MTV
Video Awards. Right.
But they don't play videos.
Right.
But they want a reason to have all the celebrities have their own award show.
Yeah.
But there's absolutely no meaning to it.
Right.
It's literally a show for the sake of a show.
Right.
So once again, if either you're the M means music in MTV.
Right.
And yet there's no music.
Right.
Now they're trying to bring back the classic stuff and things like that. But for the last 15 years, to your point,
you can't find a music
video
there.
I just wonder sometimes, you know, and that's the thing where, like I said, I look at this. For instance, you talked about, you know, if you got a review in Rolling Stone.
That meant something.
In the current issue.
Yeah.
With David Grohl on the cover.
Yeah.
There are 9 album reviews.
Yeah.
9.
Yeah.
And the cool thing about Rolling Stone.
Your point
was
there being.
Only 9. What am I going to do with 9 reviews? I'm
right.
coming here to see what's new.
Right.
9 reviews. It used to be 17 pages.
Yeah, I know.
Not only that, but the reviews were written. And they were, as John was saying, in terms of literature, they were written well. They were written by some of the best reviewers of the time. They delved deep into the album. They delved deep into what the context of the album was. Now those 9 reviews, none of them are over 200 words,
right.
which is almost impossible to really talk about anything. And I went through here. There are 9 reviews. 6 have 3.5 stars.
Yeah.
3 have 4 stars.
Oh.
So everything's fantastic.
They like everything they're hearing.
There's no bad albums out there at all.
Good. Well, that's good.
Everybody gets a trophy.
All right. Here's the important question. Let's say Jan Wenner called you up right now and said, Jim, you're a fervent fan of this magazine. Only you can save it. What would you do to make it relevant again?
Well, I'll tell you. What I would do is one thing. You have to decide. Now, it's actually a good thing that they're selling it in that. If depending on what their direction will be, and there is a question whether Jan Wenner and his son, Gus, who is 27 years old, has been overseeing
mm-hmm.
it for the last couple of years to some extent. If they are bought by a huge conglomerate,
mm-hmm.
see, that Rolling Stone is still owned by them, so it's kind of a private thing. They've got money, but they don't have endless deep pockets.
Would you keep them on, Winner, chicken dinner? Would you keep them on?
Maybe the kid. I think Jan Winner, I think he's done just wants it. To leave. He's 71 years old.
Oh.
You know, so he needs to, you know, he wants to just enjoy the rest of his life. But my point is, this magazine will never make money, right? So if you've got a company that has millions, hundreds of magazines, they could absorb a loss
just for the status of keeping the name alive,
and then make this a rock and roll, smaller audience, nicher, but be true to its roots.
Yeah,
because if you're going to make it, I don't want to, you know. In my view, maybe it's my age, but I don't want to see Taylor Swift on the cover of Rolling Stone, because that's not what this magazine's about. Yes, it was about what was popular in music, but it was about rock. It's called Rolling Stone. There's a rock element to that.
Was Rolling Stone the one that put the quote-unquote sexy picture of the Zarnaev brothers on their cover?
Yes.
They were, right?
Yes. Yeah, they put
and they got a lot of heat for that.
And you know, that's the thing. I mean, the cover used to, I mean, you know, Annie Leibovitz, one of the great
photographers of all time,
made her bones with her covers. And I mean, some of the, there's no doubt. I mean, there, I can still close my eyes and there's a Charles Manson cover from 1970 where, you know, they superimposed his eyes where they looked even scarier. But my point is, those were the cultural touchstones that used to be on here. Probably the greatest cover in terms of impact was in 1981. If you remember, it was after John Lennon's death. It was the last photo shoot he ever did with Yoko dressed and John was naked in the natal, the natal position, you know, next to her, showing kind of their relationship of her as the mother or the, you know, the nurturer for him. And he was in the fetal position, I should say. And so that was where you go, okay, now that's Rolling Stone.
Yeah.
But over the last few years, you know, they've had Christina Aguilera, they've had Jessica Simpson in her underwear.
But they know that somebody passing by that who sees that, and they're going to sell more.
And I guess my view was, that's how you sell a magazine, but are you selling out?
Yeah.
By doing that. So for people like our age, this, you know, it's a huge, like, wow, Rolling Stone could be gone.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, Kevin, you don't read Rolling Stone. You're a music fan.
Yeah, not really anymore. I mean, you can go online and it's all the same. I used to go for reviews, but there's no point anymore.
Right.
Between Spotify and
You have 1,000 options if you're looking for music reviews.
So that's why I wonder if it's just,
you know what the equivalent of this is in comedy is, I don't know if you read it, but I never missed National Lampoon when I was a kid. Read it cover to cover, paused a day, and then read it again cover to cover, just because they had writers there that went on to write for Saturday Night Live and
do all kinds
of movies. Yeah. It was an incredible roster of writers over there. And I just thought, well, I hope this never goes away because I'll need this the rest of my life.
And
it went away.
Yeah. I mean, so, and Playboy the same way. Some of these iconic things from the 50s and
60s. The Village Voice just did their last issue this week.
Are you serious?
Did you know that?
No.
Yeah. Their let me clarify. Their last pulp edition. They'll still be an online entity.
Wow.
But the Village Voice, I mean, that's another one that really, really meant something.
Another
for a long
kind
time.
Of trailblazing counterculture to some extent. And that's the thing, you know, I mean, it's not just Rolling Stone too. I mean, they are dealing in a reality of the entire, publishing, business.
Right.
That has been completely decimated by the internet. So it's not all just the content. It's just the fact that, as I said, younger people, what do I need to pick up a magazine for?
Right.
You know, like I said, people our age, we look and we still remember going through these things and the tactile of it and waiting for it to come in the mail every week. You know, one of the things that I joke about is about, I've been a subscriber for more than 30 some years.
Still and, currently are?
Yeah. Well, here's why. So about 15 years ago, they sent me this thing. You can get a lifetime, since you're this valued subscriber.
Right.
We're going to offer you a lifetime subscription for $30.
For the rest of your life?
For the rest of my life. I mean, that's how much 1 year costs.
Yeah.
So I'm like, well, how do I turn this down? Right.
Yeah.
So I say, sure. So, if, as you know, if you look at your magazines that you get a subscription for, if you look on there, most all those numbers there, there's always the date where your subscription expires.
Right.
Well, I looked on here one day just for the heck of it.
And look. It'll tell you when you're going to die.
I see SEP September 53. So I do the math. I was born in 64.
Yeah.
BS and Rolling Stone says I'm dying at 89.
Yes, you are.
According to...
They're very trustworthy. So, you can't deny this.
So they went to some actuary table, or they went to my doctor.
Oh, no.
And they put September 53. So now it became, for the last 10 years, it's been kind of a running joke that, well, my goal now is to outlive my subscription so I can call them up in October of 53.
What do you people know?
And say, hey,
I'm still alive.
Where's my magazine? But here's the irony. I'm outliving it.
Yes.
I may outlive it 30 years before I thought.
I wonder how many people will complain after paying their $30 for a lifetime subscription if they go under. People furious going, we got to have a class action suit. They ripped me off of 100 years of magazine.
Well, here's my question, too. So now what if the new owners come in
and
say, hey, lifetime schmifetime.
Yeah.
That was the old regime.
Well, that happened.
I would not be subscribing to this if I wasn't getting it for free now.
There is a magazine called Games Magazine, and it's crossword puzzles and all kinds of stuff like that. And I was a subscriber to it, and then they sold to another company, and I still had a year and a half on my subscription, and they didn't want to honor it.
Really?
They said, no, you were under the old regime.
Really?
They
could
do new people. I didn't think so.
Did they send you money back?
I got a small amount of money back, but not enough to cover the just for my trouble. But I didn't want the money. I wanted.
Right.
I guess still have the magazine. Send it to me.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, this magazine is a mere shadow of what it used to be.
It's sad, isn't it?
It really is. Like I said, I mean, 62 pages. They used to have a 62-page story on Warren Zevon.
Right.
I mean, you know, that was one story.
Right.
So,
but
I mean,
it's hard to replace. Be honest. If somebody said to you, we have to replace Hunter S. Thompson, you go, I don't think we can replace Hunter S. Thompson.
No, and like I said, they've continued to try, even in this issue, I look through here, and there's stories about Iraq and ISIS.
Right.
And so they still try to have that edge, but here's the other side of the coin. You know, when those stories in the 60s were being written, especially about the war in Vietnam, I mean, those stories... There were guys at that time, because the women really weren't part of the army.
Mm-hmm.
There were guys whose lives were being impacted. They were getting drafted at 18.
Right.
So to read that really
very
did,
sobering.
Yeah. It was relevant.
Right.
I mean, we can all want to maybe we're interested in terrorism and ISIS, but we don't feel the direct impact. So to me, it almost feels almost like it's, we'll throw in a story about ISIS because it makes us look like we're talking about politics, but are there readers really reading that story about?
You would hope they are.
I know,
you would hope, but there's no guarantee.
No.
A couple months ago, we had Cooper Hefner on. So that's the son of Hugh Hefner, who is now taking over the empire. And he's a young guy. He's in his early 20s.
Yeah, right.
And I said to him that for most of us, myself included, the charm of Playboy was, hey.
And you didn't tell him, oh, by the way, I've seen your mother, Kimberly Conrad,
naked. No, I didn't mention that. I didn't mention that. Because then he'd say something about my mother and we'd start hitting each other. All right. So then I said, but in all honesty, as important as that was to me to go, oh, look at how that she looks nice.
Right, right.
The Playboy interview, reading that interview was such an important part of that magazine every month because I always felt, and it was a number of people who did the interviews, but I always thought it was the most honest interview I could find anywhere.
And I tell you, I used to, because I had a subscription to Playboy for a while, and I know exactly what you're saying. It sounds really cliched.
Yeah. But you partially read it for the articles.
I did read it for the Playboy interview and the articles. And they used to have the annual Playboy music poll.
Right.
There was some legitimate literature.
Pigskin picks with all the college basketball and football.
Yes.
Yeah.
There were, I mean, don't get me wrong. It's not that I paged over the centerfold.
Right.
But it wasn't merely just to get my kicks.
Right.
There was some good stuff in there.
Yeah, there was.
And the Playboy interview was not only an honest interview, but once again, they really used to get the people that were of our age and our era that were not in a regular we're not in Time magazine.
Right.
Or if they were, they weren't talking the way they would to Playboy.
Yeah.
You would see the F word.
Right.
And you never saw the F word in Newsweek or Time.
Well, the most famous one was when Jimmy Carter was considered to be something of a country bumpkin. Then they interviewed him in the Playboy interview, and he talked about the lust that he had in his heart.
it made him more real. You
and
know?
It became a major part of the campaign. And
yeah.
And that is still, when you talk about Jimmy Carter, you say, well, did he lust in his heart? I mean, that phrase became iconic.
It entered the lexicon all of a sudden.
Yeah. So those magazines, and Rolling Stone is the same, like I said, there were stories or covers that I could, like I said, if you were a regular reader, you can still close your eyes and say, oh, wow, I remember that cover or that story. And same thing with Playboy. And I just don't think that today's media, mass media, and the way the internet is designed, it's
more disposable now.
Well, it's just, and what the sad part is too. If you asked me this question before, because I used to work in a magazine, I was a magazine editor for about 10 years, and what I think the hardest thing is, I've always viewed this magazine, especially in the internet world. Give me. It should be something that gives me a reason to read it. If it's too much like the internet, then why do I need this magazine? If you look at most magazines today, their layouts are very internet-like.
Sure, of course.
Whereas I would say, you know what? Don't make it look like an internet.
Go the opposite.
So that you actually have value.
Right.
Because if there's not value added here in this hard copy, then why have it?
Right. So true. All right, we must take a break. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back, and we'll close up shop, as the kids like to say. It's Bill F. and Jim Toronto in for Wendy on WGN.
Yep. Hey, it's Friday.
It is Friday, Jim. That part's
or
true.
Or no, it's, right?
Just Friday.
Friday.
Just Friday.
Friday.
Jim Toronto has filled in for Wendy Snyder. The reviews are in. Hetty Weiss says 4 stars. Must listen.
Steppenwolf won't like that.
No. No. Jim, thanks for doing this today.
Oh, thank you so
greatly
much,
appreciate
Bill.
It's it. If you want
fun.
To see you on stage, is there some option people have?
Yes. Did I throw that out? I hope I didn't throw out my...
With the baby and the bathwater.
I probably did. But yes, nrplayers.com, North Riverside Players. I'm going to play called... Agatha Christie play called And Then There Were None, a great mystery. It opens next Friday, September 29th. And runs next weekend and the weekend after that, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So please get your tickets. It's a great show.
Will I have to bring my own opera glasses, or will they be provided at the theater?
They will be provided, although most seats are well within regular viewing.
Oh, excellent.
Distance.
That's very good news. Thank you so much for doing this. And again,
thank
your
you.
Podcast
always fun.
Is?
Yes, every Monday, a new episode. Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. And I even have something called a landing page.
Oh.
Which means all of my previous podcasts
are also
available
there.
Too.
Technology, huh?
Oh,
isn't it the best?
Gotta love it.
Wendy will be back on Monday with a whole slew of awards that she's won, so we'll talk to her about that.
Are you in a Hall of Fame at your high school yet?
No.
Really?
No.
Well, maybe this will spurn them on.
I don't think so. Just the opposite.
Is your high school still open?
Yeah.
Because sadly, there's a lot of high schools that are closed over the last 10 or 15 years.
Yeah.
Thankfully, mine is still there, too, St. Pat's.
No,
it's still it's still an all-boys school, too, for Catholics, which is very few and far between.
Yeah.
What high school did you go to?
Oak Forest High School in Oak Forest.
Well, that's always going to be there, right?
I think so.
Unless,
there was talk of turning it into a Starbucks, but they...
Kim Jong-un is...
Well, he's thought about it. He has thought about it. All right, that's it, everybody. Thank you for joining us. Have a great weekend. Bye.